702.
Add your voice.
Have your say.
Let's walk the talk.
Warren, good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning.
Good morning. How are you doing, Joshua?
No, I'm great. I'm great, man. I hope you're good as well on this Heritage Day. I take it that at some point you're going to put something on the fire.
Yeah, something or someone. Something going on the fire.
Let's stay away from someone that might get you into trouble. You know what I mean? And the last thing I want to do is to be that guy that has to go to court and say, yes, he said it on the show. No. 120 years of automotive history. I mean, that's actually quite fascinating. You know, we did it start with that first car that was driven in, I don't know, in Oudtshoorn or something to that effect?
So essentially what happens with South Africa is South Africa can pride itself on definitely being a country about its motoring. I mean, with the first car being imported in 1896 through Port Elizabeth, now Quebec, it was brought in by a businessman called John Percy, and this was a Benz Velo. So what happened with this vehicle was there was no fuel in the country to drive the vehicle. So this was the first vehicle imported into South Africa. So the vehicle was taken by train to Pretoria. It was displayed on the 4th of January, 1897, to the then President Paul Kruger, the President of Transvaal. And slowly after that, South Africans, you know, this new vehicle caught on. The first Model T was imported into South Africa. Model A was imported in 1903. And from then on, vehicles started coming into South Africa on a regular basis. But the president of South Africa at the time had put systems in place for these manufacturers to start looking at South Africa in terms of building the vehicles locally and selling them locally to build the economy of South Africa. So small plants slowly started to open up over the years, basically a lot in Port Elizabeth, Durban, and a couple of places in Cape Town, Blackheath, and so on and so on. And these vehicles started being produced in South Africa.
It's quite amazing that Gqeberha seems to be at the center of sort of our motoring history. I mean, that's still a part of the world where many manufacturing plants stay. I mean, it's quite interesting to see that that's where it started and it's sort of just continued. Do you think that it's historically linked to the Eastern Cape, or is it just coincidental that the first car happened to enter South Africa through that route? And since then, we've been sort of, building cars in South Africa has been synonymous with the Eastern Cape.
Well, the thing is you've got to look at the port there. And obviously that port has specific advantages and disadvantages. I would think that the reasoning for that port, for the factories being put there, is also, remember that Johannesburg has always been the epicenter of everything that sort of happened in South Africa. And at that time, needing to have factories situated near ports, obviously to bring parts in to manufacture and then supply back into South Africa, there was a very good rail system that was supplying up. Remember, they also had Durban. Right now, a lot of vehicles are assembled in PE. The tire manufacturers are there. All your components are brought in through the harbor. I do believe it's got something to do with the depth of the harbor, because ships are able to come in through Port Elizabeth. But besides that, that specific area was also targeted then as an industrial hub and built up from there. And the government insisted on having certain plants there. Cape Town also had its fair share. Durban, definitely. I mean, Durban still has the Toyota plant there. Mm. And you are able to bring in components, assemble the vehicles, and export out of Durban quite because of the fact that the port's nearby. So it's all about the cost there. But what you must remember also is you see, South Africa, at one point in the 90s, a lot of vehicles were produced in South Africa for export.
Yeah.
We produced a lot of the 3 Series BMWs were built here for export and local consumption. Mm. I mean, if you just look at the BMW plant, we at one point were manufacturing the 3 Series, the 5 Series, right? Everything except the M cars was manufactured in South Africa for export. If you look at the Opel plant, same story. We were manufacturing a lot of vehicles here for local and export. VW plant in Uitenhage, we were manufacturing the Golfs, the Jettas, the City Golfs for local consumption. We were doing the Polos as well. And a lot of those vehicles were being exported out of the country, so there was a lot of revenue coming in from that. That's why those areas were quite busy. But that sort of slowed down. And it kind of started when BMW said, look, we're no longer going to manufacture the 3 Series in South Africa. Instead, we're going to manufacture the X3. Now, at that point, government should have gone there and offered tax breaks, offered whatever to keep the 3 Series there, because the 3 Series is BMW's best-selling vehicle. For every one X3 sold, there's about 10 to 15 3 Series sold. So in terms of jobs, in terms of all those other things, there should have been an effort made to keep the manufacturing of the 3 Series in South Africa. We've been doing it for a very long time.
You know, it's just absolutely stunning thinking of it, and how then we sort of hurting ourselves in the process, and how we but I guess that is a different economics conversation altogether, which I find fascinating, but it's one that needs to be had anyway. What I wanted to know from you though is I'm looking at the history of that first car when it arrives here in South Africa, and lo and behold, we don't even have fuel for the poor thing. So what ended up happening there? I mean, I just find it fascinating that that's how things sort of kicked off.
Well, at the time, remember, once the first vehicle came into South Africa, obviously, there were horse-drawn carts going through roads. So what spurs the country on is you get a massive infrastructure development and your filling stations start popping up. Obviously, route dependent. So if you understand how it used to work with your horse and cart, every small town would be 2 days' ride from the one town to the next town. 2 days' ride on horseback. That was the way the towns were normally put together. Obviously, some were a lot further than others, but you had your little dots on the way to Durban, dots on the way to Cape Town from Johannesburg. You'd pass through Kimberley, that kind of thing. And that was all to do with your horse-drawn carts. Then what ends up happening is we've got these motor vehicles coming through. But the motor vehicles were limited to a certain radius. And remember, a lot of these new vehicles were open. They were open-topped. They weren't meant to go far. They're not the vehicles that we know at this or what we see right now. A lot of these were it was sort of four wheels, a box seating position with a handle, not a steering wheel. And you put some fuel in it. At the time, it was benzene, and it had a limited radius, but only the very wealthy of the very wealthy could purchase stuff like the Benz VLO. Then what ends up happening is, because Ford, remember, Henry Ford had pioneered the assembly line, and the Model A was obviously built as a people's car. It was built as a people's car. And then with the advent of the Model T, I mean, South Africa started importing 1,000 cars a year. It would basically, from about 1910, vehicles would start flooding the market. Now, remember, the Model T is the most successful Ford of its day. And that Model T, because of the price, the idea behind it was a car for everybody. And with the advent of that, you start seeing the national road development. So your N1s, your N2s, that kind of thing starts happening in South Africa, and then the country kicks off. Massive infrastructure development, and your fuel stations start popping up. And with the advent of the Second World War at the time, if you look at it, before that, South Africans would favor the American cars because of their softer suspension, because of the roads that we had. And shortly after that, we'd start going for the European models because the European models were sportier cars and the roads would start being built. So you didn't have to be on gravel all the time.
I mean, one of the things that I always find fascinating is, especially when you look, you know, I guess I can describe myself as a bit of a petrol head. And, you know, the one thing that Americans are known from, especially from the 1960s, are their massive gas guzzling. They're massive gas guzzling cruisers, and you know, those big, you know, whether it be the Dodge Challenger, whether it be the iconic Ford.
Mustang,
you know, and cars of that nature, the big V8s, and not too many of those in South Africa. Instead, we sort of have that smaller European style of vehicle all too often. But that also then leads me to something that I find absolutely fascinating, which I think Warren will touch on up next, and that is obviously the issue of our own manufacturing, because I'm looking at it. I'm looking at some of the vehicles that we produced. One of them I see is listed as the Dart and Flamingo. First time I heard of it. Stunning car. Yeah. Have no cooking clue why we don't see this thing, you know, why we see more, don't see more of these. You know, whether it be an old Doppy that has one in his garage, or alternatively that someone picked it up and ran with it. So we'll talk about all of that up next. Just taking a quick break.
702.
Add your voice.
Have your say.
Let's walk the talk.
22 minutes past 7, where we left off the conversation, Warren Tucker, is the fact that unfortunately we made bad choices in terms of what cars we preferred back in the day. Instead of going with the nice American muscle cars, we went with the smaller European vehicles. And that is why, you know, I guess a Ford Escort is what qualifies as a classic in South Africa at the moment. But let's talk about our own manufacturing history. I see that there's a couple of them that we produced, some of them more famous than others. You know, what happened? What's sort of the history behind South African car production with a 120-year pedigree with vehicles? You and I, neither you and I can point to a quintessential South African brand that's on our roads. Yes, our BMWs, Mercedes-Benzes, Toyotas, and VWs are built mostly here, but, you know, the German Japanese cars.
I just want to point something out to you quickly. You need to understand that Escort that you were talking about currently being exported out of this country and sold in the UK, a clean example of an Escort without rust, because we are on the Vicia, has been sold in the UK upwards of between £5,000 and £10,000.
What?
Okay, for that specific vehicle.
You must
remember something, and I was coming to this point. South Africa has a very rich motoring history, and because of that motoring history, there are a lot of one-offs in South Africa. There are a lot of cars that we designed here that you find nowhere else in the world that collectors all over the world want to buy and want to own. And, I mean, I'll give you a couple before we get into the Dart, but essentially, South Africa, you need to look at South Africa from a motoring point of view, from a Kyalami point of view. And in the 80s, what won on Sunday sold on Monday. And the rules in terms of racing was whatever you went racing with, you had to make 200 examples of it as road-going vehicles for the public to purchase. And essentially, what they would do there is take the race car, take out the roll cages and everything else, put seats in it, put indicators, headlights, all the other stuff, so that it's road legal. But essentially, you've got a copy of what's on the track right now. That still happens today, but the motoring side of that sort of died in South Africa. There's not that big emphasis on it. I mean, there's vehicles like the Alpha GTV6, the 3-liter. That vehicle came out of a fight. There was a fight on the track in terms of the manufacturers. So there was a 2.5-liter version that was on the track, and at the time, the dominant BMW, the 535, was out there flying its flag, and the Group 1 racing, they couldn't beat this vehicle. So South Africa took the car, shoehorned the 3-liter V6 motor in there, upped the speed, the top speed, to 224 kilometers an hour, and the first time out on the track, it won. A lot of these sort of vehicles come out of rivalries between manufacturing companies and drivers. And we see a lot of that in South Africa. I mean, the 333i BMW, similar story. if we look at the XR6, everybody's seen a Ford Sierra XR6. We had an XR8 here, which was built again. And they took what they did here was, they took the car, the South African XR6, South African-designed XR6, shoehorned a Mustang V8 motor into it and went racing. And what won on the track sold on Monday. And that's how vehicles used to be sold. That's why there's such a huge motoring culture in South Africa, because of that. Someone's dad had one of these fast Fords or fast Alphas, and the vehicle was kept in the family and passed down, and sort of the kids also picked up on all of this. I mean, Kyalami has been revamped. It's beautiful, but you don't see racing happening at Kyalami.
Yeah, and I guess this pandemic is also not helping the situation. Getting people there. But let's talk about the South African brands and why those specifically just didn't take off. I mean, historically speaking, because as you said, you know, there's a rich motoring history, but nothing really took hold as a quintessential South African brand.
Yes.
What do we attribute that to?
So South Africa, being an entrepreneur myself, is a very hostile environment to entrepreneurs in terms of funding, in terms of getting your business going. You literally, you know, South Africa's, let's look at Elon Musk. Elon Musk should be producing the Teslas in South Africa, but instead he's producing them in the States. Why? Because South Africa is not really that fertile an environment for entrepreneurs in terms of funding and everything else. It's a very risk-averse society. But coming back to the Dodge and Flamingo, this vehicle was built in 1955. So a gentleman by the name of Bob van Niekerk and Willie Meiser, they got together and they built this car. And essentially, this is a fiberglass body. It's a two-door, two-seater, right? And this vehicle was built again, built in South Africa. Mm-hmm. It was sold in England. It was sold in parts of Canada. But this vehicle at the time, Kyalami had a nine-hour race, and the vehicle won that race.
Jeez.
Okay, and it won this specific race, and again sales picked up from there. So in 1959, this vehicle came first in the 9 hour, covering a distance of about 922 to 959 kilometers. Right, that's on the track. Now races like that are built to are there to showcase your car's reliability and durability. Now, the vehicle itself was sort of put together in South Africa, but it was put together like sort of within a pot. So there were parts used from other vehicles to put this vehicle together.
Mm-hmm.
But the body and the styling was quintessentially South African. It was designed, it was built here. Now, you have a manufacturer at the moment that you can actually buy a kit for this vehicle, and you can still build one.
Awesome.
Okay, so there's replicas still being done. And it's a company, the car is called a Levy Dart, and it's a company that's owned by a guy called Jess Levy. And you can buy a period-accurate version of this vehicle, and there's a wide range of engine variants that you can put into the car.
No, that's absolutely stunning. And I mean, especially for true motor enthusiasts, people that have the extra buck to spare, I mean, it would be great to be able to buy the kit, build a car yourself, and, you know, take it to what is a stunning car to the street. Warren, as always, I mean, I could have this conversation with you from now all the way through to 10 o'clock, but, you know, time doesn't allow for that. I really appreciate it, you know, looking at the heritage of the South African motoring history, basically. Absolutely stunning. All the best to you, mate, and enjoy the rest of your day, man.
You too.
Lekker one. Cheers, mate. That was Warren Tucker, our resident car enthusiast. I mean, it's actually quite stunning. And do yourself a favor, go and Google images of the Dart and Flamingo. It's a beautiful car, eh? South African made. And yeah, so what if it's a piece from this car and a piece from that car, et cetera, et cetera, and then, put together. Many cars are built like that. Remember the iconic McLaren F1? BMW engine. People forget that.